ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the 8th canto, chapter 11, and today we'll do text 13 through 25. Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Habhyāyāt sauridhaṁ sakyur Atasyapi samacharan Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Abhyayāt soridhaṁ sakhyur Atasyapi samacharan Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Abhyayat soridhang sakyur Atasyapi samacharan Please chant. Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Abhyayat soridhaṁ sakhyur Atasyapi samācharan Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Abhyayat soridhaṁ sakhyur Atasyapi samācharan Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Abhyayāt sauridhaṁ sakhyur Atasyāpi samācharan Vaiṣṇavīs Sakkāyaṁ patitaṁ drishtvā Jambho bhali sakak surit Okay. Synonyms. Sakkāyaṁ, his intimate friend. Patitaṁ, having fallen. Drishtvā, after seeing. Jambha, the demon Jambha. Balisakaha, a very intimate friend of Bali Maharaj. Surit, and constant well-wisher. Abhyayat appeared on the scene. Sauridham, very compassionate friendship. Sakyuhu, of his friend. Patasya, who was injured and fallen. Api, although. Samacharan, just to perform friendly duties. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. Please repeat. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. So we'll press on until we get to 25, which has a purport. Sasingavaha asadya gadam udyamya ranghasa chatravada Atadayat Sakram Gajamcha Sumahabalaha. The greatly powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcefully struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant, whose name is Airavata. Okay, you're paying attention. 15. Kada prahara vyatito prishyang vivalito gajaha janabhyam taranim sprishtva kashmalang paramang yayo. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious.
Tatorato matalina haribhir dashashataya vritaha anito dipamutsrijya ratam aruruhe vipuhu.
Thereafter, Matali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot.
Tasya tat pujayan karma yantur dhanava sattamaha shulena jalata tangtu svayamano hanan vridhe.
Appreciating Matali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Matali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. 18.
Sehe rujang sudur marsham sattvang alambya matalihi Indro jambasya sankruddho vadrena paharachjiraha.
Although the pain was extremely severe, Matali tolerated it with great patience. Indra, however, became extremely angry at Jambasura. He struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. So this has been in the news a lot lately. These people in the Middle East severing the heads of, in this case, captive enemies. Even if you want to consider them enemies. So this is not what's going on here. Here there's a battle. And in a battle, they're fighting for dominance, fighting for victory. And so they're more or less equal opponents fighting each other. And if you get the opportunity to sever some opponent's head from his body, that's okay. It's a battle. It's a war. Equals. Not like what's happening in the Middle East. You capture some poor journalist. And just because he's from America or England and you don't like those countries, you cut his head off. That is horrible. Those people are going to suffer so horribly for that. They have no idea. Text 19. Jambang shutvah tang tasya kyatayo narada drishahe namushishcha balakpakas tatra petustaran vitaha.
When Naradrishi informed Jambasura's friends and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, the three demons named Namuchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battlefield in great haste.
So this Narada Muni is all over the place. It seems like whenever anything is happening, Narada Muni is there. It's practically, he's all pervading. And he's always carrying messages to the demons, it seems, to tell them what's going on, to get them to act in a certain way. Very interesting.
Text 20. Vachobi parasaya indram ardayantosya marmasu sharaya avakiran megha dharabhir eva parvatam.
Rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart, these demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rain wash a great mountain.
21. Harindasha satanyajau harvasvasya balaksharai tavadpir ardayam asa yugapalaghu astavan.
Quickly handling the situation on the battlefield, the demon Bala put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulation by simultaneously piercing them all with an equal number of arrows.
22. Shatabhyang matalim pako ratang savayam pritak sakrit sandhana mokshena tad adbhutam abhudrane.
Paka, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Matali, by fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. This was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield.
23. Namuchi panchadashabhi swarnapung karmaheshabhi ahatya vyanadat sankhe satoya eva toyadaha. Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. 24. Sarvatakshara-kutena shakrang sarata saratim chadayam asura sura pravrit suryam ivam buddha.
And other demons covered Indra along with his chariot and chariot driver with incessant showers of arrows, just as clouds cover the sun in the rainy season.
25. Alakshayantastam. Oh, different meter now. Alakshayantastam ativa vivala uchukrishur devaganak sahanaga anayaka shatru balena nirjata vanikpata binnanavo yatarnave.
The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. Having no captain or leader, they began lamenting like traitors in a wrecked vessel in the midst of the ocean. So now there's a purport. From this statement, it appears that in the upper planetary system, there is shipping, and that traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary system in the creation of the Lord is certainly not vacant or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There is no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living beings.
Maham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine.
Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschachade Shtarine. Om Agyana Tamirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitam Jena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha.
Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sopadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavaksha. Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shah. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshri Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Pancha Kalputurubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So I'm absolutely sure that if before we came to Krishna consciousness, if we had read this Srimad Bhagavatam, we would also think this is mythology. People doing all these wonderful things with just bows and arrows. Come on. We all know what a bow is. We all know what arrows are. We have experience of these things. This is just mythology. Right? That's what it sounds like. But no. We are meant to accept this as absolute fact. It actually happened. Shukadeva Goswami did not sit down on the bank of the Ganges to tell stories that were not factual. He was asked by the king, Parikshit Maharaj, who had been cursed to die in 7 days, what is the duty of human beings in general, and especially of one who is about to die? So when somebody asks you a question like that, serious question, they've been cursed to die in 7 days, you're not going to sit down and tell mythological stories. But it's interesting that he didn't just say, hey, just chant Hare Krishna for the next 7 days. He went through this whole 12 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, telling all these fantastic histories of like this battle that we're hearing about between the demons and the demigods. So, it's important. Although it may not seem so on the surface, why do we need to hear about Jambasura and Bala and Namuchi and all these demons? Why do we need to hear about them? Why don't we just cut to the chase and hear Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto? So we're actually forbidden to do that. Srila Prabhupada repeatedly said that the Srimad Bhagavatam is complete in 12 cantos, but unscrupulous men, they jump to the 10th canto to hear about the Rasa Lila because it sounds like the dealings of ordinary boys and girls, and it's very pleasing to think about that. Dancing with other men's wives and
kissing and this kind of stuff is very pleasing. This is kind of exactly the kind of thing they want to hear. Even in this age of everybody has an internet-connected device, you can read on your cell phone. Still, so many books are being sold, not only books from the BBT, unfortunately, but all kinds of novellas that deal just with these subjects. Boy meets girl, boy and girl fall in love, they hug, they kiss. People like to hear this kind of stuff. So unscrupulous men, they jump directly to the 10th canto to speak about things like that. Or Prabhupada forbids us from, and the acharyas forbid us from doing that. The Srimad Bhagavatam is complete in 12 cantos. We're in the 8th canto. And the first two cantos are compared to, what are they compared to? The lotus feet of the Lord. In the second canto, 10th chapter, first verse, you'll find Shukadev Goswami mentions the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I've been for years trying to get at least our brahmacharis here to memorize this verse. Anybody want to recite that verse? Any of our brahmacharis memorize that yet? Very important. You should know what you're reading about as you go through the cantos. So, Shukadev Goswami says, Atra sargas visargascha stanam poshanam utaya manvantaresha anukata niroda muktir ashraya. Not very difficult. You should try to memorize it. So the sarga we know means creation. So that is the subject matter of the first canto. Sarga, creation. Then visarga means subsequent creation. Because it's pointed out, we call Lord Brahma the creator of the universe, but actually he's the sub-creator. Creation is done by the Lord with ingredients that he finds where? Not in Home Depots, not in Lowe's, from himself. The Lord himself generates the ingredients required for creating the universe. This is what makes him God. You and I want to get involved in some, nowadays they really promote this DIY concept. Do it yourself. Don't hire some technician, don't hire some plumber, some carpenter. Do it yourself. Because they want you to come to Home Depot or Lowe's or what are some of the other stores out there? Orchard. Come and drop some big bucks, buy a whole bunch of stuff, and go home and do it yourself. Knowing quite well, because research shows that most of these do-it-yourself projects, they don't come to any fruition. Either they just stop out of frustration or they do it wrong and they still have to hire some carpenter or plumber or whatever. But they push you, come and spend money. But we know we can't manufacture the ingredients that we need. If I want to make an extension on my house, if I want to build a new Tulsi house, I have to go out and get the ingredients, the lumber, the nails, the screws, whatever. But that's not what God has to do. He doesn't have to go shopping at Lowe's or Home Depot. Whenever he wants to create, the ingredients for creation come out of his own person. And then, Lord Brahma, he becomes the subsequent creation, Visarga. So, Sarga, Visarga. So, the second canto is named the cosmic manifestation. Then, the third canto, Atta Sarga Visarga Stanam, the status quo. Third canto, and then the fourth canto, Poshanam, which Prabhupada translates here as the creation of the fourth order. And then, fifth canto, Utaya, the creative impetus. Again, we all have impetus to create things, just like Bhumi just created a yoga studio around the corner. But ask her how long it took and how much endeavor. It wasn't just like, hey, I want a yoga studio, snap my finger and everything. No. Every little detail, every Sanskrit letter that's painted there, somebody had to do it with great endeavor. It doesn't just happen like that. So we may have creative impetus, but we cannot, again, just boom and create something. And even when it seems that we can do that, like in the case of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Kardama Muni, as you know, was a great renunciant. He was sitting there in meditation for so many years. Then he was given Devahuti in marriage, and she also became a renunciant. But after some time, he became compassionate that, my dear wife, you've become so thin and you don't have any comforts because you've taken to my service. So I'm going to take you on a pleasure cruise throughout the universe. And it seemed just from his desiring, this huge spaceship appeared. But it's explained later on in the 11th canto that some living entities in this material world, they learn the art of controlling the sub-material elements. So again, the elements didn't come out of his person. By mystic power they learn. And mystic means we don't understand how it's done. That's why we call it mystic power. But if you're trained in how to do this, then it's not mystic It's just another thing that you can do. Just like a mosquito or a bird, they can fly. For us, that's a mystic power. But for them, that's just business as usual. They know how to do it, so they do it. So similarly, these mystic yogis, they learn how to control the sub-material elements, and therefore they can appear to create something out of nothing, make a big spaceship, and fly around the universe. So, but again, it's just sub-creation. So that's the fifth canto. Then the sixth canto, Manvantar. All the Manus are described, and the prophet translated that as prescribed duties for mankind. Because how mankind is supposed to act, that we learn from the Manus. The word man, manusha, comes from Manu. That's why we're called man. Man meaning humankind, not just male. So, sixth canto, prescribed duties for mankind. The seventh canto, Isha Anukata. Isha means, what does the word Isha mean? Controller. So who's the ultimate controller? God. Anukata. So Isha Anukata, the science of God, proper translates. And then we come to the canto that we're reading in, the eighth canto. Nirodha, which proper translates as withdrawal of the cosmic creation. So this is where we are now. Now, in each of those cantos, Srila Prabhupada selected a seed verse. There's a seed verse. When you first open the book, on the very, what's called the title page, there's a seed verse for each canto. So, we're meant to, obviously, if Prabhupada picked out that verse as a seed verse for the canto, that we should at least try to dive into that verse and understand it. So, everybody should know the seed verse for the first canto. Especially the Sankirtan devotees. Yes. Yeah, continue. Puranakuladodita, yes. And if you've ever seen that movie, Brilliant as the Sun, describing how the BBT functioned, they focused on that verse also. So what does it mean? Krishna sudama pagate dharma jnana nibisaha kalona sarisangisha purana arko dunodita. Very important verse. That this Srimad Bhagavatam and our Vaisheshika Prabhu, maybe some other Sankirtan devotees, they used to go out and distribute the book with that verse. They would approach some gentleman in the airport. Excuse me, sir. Can I have a moment of your time? Krishna sudama pagate dharma jnana nibisaha kalona sarisangisha purana arko dunodita. So the bewildered businessman is looking. What the heck is he talking about? Sister, let me tell you what it is. This Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna for his own abode, accompanied by knowledge, religion, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of this age of Kali will receive light from this Purana, this Bhagavata Purana. Very important concept. So, and many books went out based on that. People were fascinated. And people are fascinated by these books. On Saturday, I went with the Harinam party to Hollywood. And it was a small party, so I spent most of the time chanting, but I spent a little time distributing books also. And people are attracted. You show them the cover, and they at least slow down, if not completely stop, because they have never seen anything like these books. And I met one young lady from San Jose. Most of these people are from out of town, either other parts of California or from other parts of the world. And it's really sad that they spend their hard-earned money to come to Hollywood. And what do? They walk around with their head down looking at these stupid stars. So-called stars, these people who are most of them dead and gone, contributed not much to human society because they acted in a few movies or they sang some stupid songs. And people come from around the world to walk around with their head down. Where's the star of such and such? So we have to approach such unfortunate people and, excuse me, are you from out of town? Yes. Where are you from? So I asked this young lady. She's from San Jose. So I showed her the Gita. And she said, I'm good. And then I stole Vijay's line, which I use all the time. I recommend you use it also, because a lot of people give you this line, I'm good. So what Vijay taught me was, when they say that, you say, but you could be better. So I threw that at her, but you could be better. And she laughed. And every Sankirtan devotee knows, as soon as they laugh, they feel they owe you a favor. If you can get them to laugh, there's a good chance you can get them to take the book. So sure enough, she took the Gita. So people are unfortunate. They have lost their vision, just like this verse in the first chapter says, due to the dense darkness of this age of Kali. And that's what it is. The age of Kali is the age of darkness. Darkness because everybody totally identifies with the body. Totally identifies with the body. They think, I am a young white male American, or I'm an old Indian, Asian Indian, not American Indian. You know, everybody's completely locked into this misidentification of the self with the body. So we are meant to snap them out of this illusion. But, of course, that means that we also have to come out of that illusion. If we're still walking around after 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 40 years of chanting Hare Krishna, thinking that I'm a white American male or an old Indian female, then we're also part of the illusion. We need to get out of that illusion. We're not these material bodies. And these material bodies will be taken away from us. Everybody who has a birth date, which means all of us, but means that we also have a death date coming up. The death date is coming up. It's just around the corner. So before the death date comes, we're meant to become fully self-realized. This is what the Bhagavatam is meant for. And we're meant to relish it. Nigama kalpaktavar galitam palam. Shukha mukha amrita javya sangyatam. It's nectar. Here, this whole battle is going on. In the 8th canto, we're hearing this battle between the demons and demigods because the demons felt cheated. They didn't get any amrita. They didn't get the nectar. But the real nectar, amrita, is this Srimad Bhagavatam. Tibata Bhagavatam. We're meant to absorb, to drink, relish this Bhagavatam. Because it is meant to give us real deathlessness. Ayur harati vang vaipungsam udyan astan chayanasam. Tasyarta yachano nita utama shloka vartaya. That this Bhagavatam, everybody's duration of life is decreasing. Ayur harati vaipungsam. How? Udyan astan chayanasam. By rising and setting. Which means when the sun rises and sets, what does that mean? Another day is gone. Which means you're a day closer to your death date. So that is there for everybody, for us included. But if we relish this Srimad Bhagavatam, then we can approach deathlessness. Ayurharita Vaipusam Udinasati. Tasyata Yatsuno Yinita Uttama Shloka Bhartarya. If we hear the topics of Uttama Shloka Krishna with attention and apply what we learn in our lives, not just we come to class, we hear it, we keep nodding all class, yes, yes, and then we go outside and again become completely absorbed in the body and forget about what we've heard. No. If we're actually hearing and we're actually practicing Krishna consciousness as delineated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, then we should be gradually approaching full self-realization. When we know ourselves to be different from this body. We experience every night, we put the body down and we go off and we're doing who knows what. Going here, going there. People call this astral travel. It's nothing fantastic or strange. We all do it. You put the body down and you go off and you do things. Sometimes you remember, sometimes you don't. But you're connected to the body by a subtle umbilical cord. This, if you study the Tibetan Buddhism, they stress on this. Just like you're connected to the womb of the mother by an umbilical cord on your body and with the baby's body. Similarly, we're all connected to this material body by a subtle umbilical cord. And at death, that subtle umbilical cord is cut, therefore you don't come back to this body. But as long as that subtle umbilical cord is there, you go traveling, you're doing whatever, and then you come back to this body. I don't come back to your body, and you don't come back to my body. Sometimes the body is invaded by a free, roving spirit who doesn't have a disembodied spirit. We call them ghosts. They don't have any gross material bodies, and they try to take over somebody else's gross body. But you're still in there, and therefore there's a fight. They want to take the body, and you don't want them because you feel that this is me. So before death comes again, we have to get to this point of self. Every one of us should be anxious to get to the point of full self-realization, where I'm no longer bewildered, thinking that the face I see in the mirror is me. It's not. It's not you. It's not me. When you look in the mirror, that American face or African face or Oriental face that you see is not you. Glasses and all. It's not you. You are the observer of that reflection in the mirror. You're observing that, but it's not you. We still remain bewildered and miss amazing. This is how powerful the Lord's Maya is. The Lord's illusory energy is so powerful, we cannot escape it. Davyesha gunamai mama maya duratteya. Krishna tells us plainly in the Bhagavad Gita. This illusory energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. That's an understatement. The understatement of all time. It's not difficult to overcome. It's impossible to overcome. You cannot overcome the Lord's material energy just by wishful thinking. You can't. The only way is by surrendering. If you surrender to me, Krishna says, then you can easily cross beyond it. So we should all be eager to cross over this material energy. To stop thinking that this face I see in the mirror every day that's getting older and the hair is getting grayer. It's not you. It's not me. And we should be eager to realize that. To see our real form. Eternal form. Youthful. Eternally youthful form. In the spiritual world, everybody is eternally youthful. Everybody. Not just those who go to a particular spa or take a particular yoga class or take a particular, you know. No. Everybody's eternally youthful on the spiritual platform. And we should be eager to get back to that platform of reality. That is the reality. This business of thinking that this face that I see in the mirror, whether it's black, white, yellow, brown, whatever, that this is me, it is not. And based on this illusion, people are killing each other. Again, these guys in the Middle East, they think that we're Muslims. And, you know, you're not, you're Americans, and therefore we have to fight you and kill you. And it's all a huge illusion. Imagine when you die on the battlefield, or nowadays you die by some terrorist act, and you realize, you see, at the moment of death, when the Yamadutas come, for most people are going to meet the Yamadutas, and they're being dragged away, and they see the body that they thought was themselves all along. No, it's not you. That body will be lying there, and you, the person, will be taken off to come before Yamaraj to be judged. So, before that happens, we should come to the point of self-realization. And, let's see, where are we? Yeah, withdrawal of the cosmic creation. And therefore, the seed verse for this canto that we're in, we should meditate on. It's in this canto, it was back in the third chapter, text 11. And it said, Sattvena pratilabhyaya naishkarmyena vipaschita. Nama kaivalya nathaya nirvana sukha sangvide. So we should keep this verse in mind as we go through this canto. Papa translates. The Supreme Personality of God, it is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of bhakti yoga. He is the bestower of uncontaminated happiness and is the master of the transcendental world. Therefore, I offer my respect unto him. So we should meditate on this verse as we go through this canto. Krishna can bestow us uncontaminated happiness. Not the little happiness that we have through sense gratification. I eat something nice, I engage in some sex life, whatever. I have a little flicker of happiness and I think, oh, I'm so happy. And then within a few moments, the material nature says, no, you're not happy. Again, bang you on the head. Wake up. You're still suffering. Not that kind of happiness. We want uncontaminated, unhindered, eternal happiness. That's what we all want. That is our birthright as spiritual beings. And therefore, we can never be happy with any so-called happiness in this world. We know going in, it's flickering. It's flickering. It lasts for a few minutes, a few moments, and then it's gone. So, in order to get back to this platform of uncontaminated happiness, we have to surrender to the master of the transcendental world. So, we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu was the first hand up. Microphone, please.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Very enlivening class. Someplace towards the beginning, you were making the point about how, when people hear these stories, everybody knows an arrow, what a bow and an arrow is and what it can do. And, here something very fantastic is being described. So how can people, be expected to believe this? They're just going to think it's mythology. And so you raised that point, and then you started to say something about Sukadev Goswami wasn't, going to waste his time telling stories to Maharaj Prickett. But I think it would take a little bit more than that to convince somebody who wasn't a devotee to take these descriptions seriously. So what are the best arguments, or what argument do you give to somebody, or arguments, to convince them that what's being described here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Vedic literature in general constitutes an accurate, true picture of reality as opposed to just mythology.
Yeah, it doesn't take great effort, because if somebody's, a little bit intelligent and a little bit honest, we can demonstrate to them that you don't understand anything that's going on around you practically. You don't even understand really how your own body is functioning. As it's stated, if they really understood how the body functioned, and the rich would never die, because they would just hire the best scientists, doctors to keep the body going forever. No, they don't understand. They don't understand. There's really no rhyme or reason as to why, again, some very rich person, all the money in the world, can hire all the best physicians, why they die at all. And then some very poor person gets some disease, they get no treatment, and they live, they continue living. So it's not about, they try to act like they understand how things are working, but they don't. They have a little glimpse, and with that little glimpse, they seem to do wonderful things, but they're still under the mercy of the Supreme Lord. It's by the will of the Lord that one person lives and another person dies. Otherwise, again, the rich would never die. They hire all the best physicians, and they claim they understand how the body works, and they would just keep it going forever. They would keep it going forever. But they can't, and they don't understand even how death occurs. Just like recently, this actress and comedian Joan Rivers passed away. She went in for some apparently routine checkup, and they noticed something, and they tried to do something. Boom, she was gone. And just to keep the family members pacified, they kept the body on life support for a few days, a week or whatever, and then eventually they had to admit, she's dead, pull the plug. So again, here's a person, famous person with money, went to a nice hospital, Cedar Sinai, and best doctors. Why did she pass away? They can't explain. And the doctor was in charge of the case, he resigned, just to save his neck, no doubt, but also out of frustration. They think they know what's going on, but they don't. So such personalities, we don't take their opinion as being important. If you don't really know what's going on, why should I take your opinion on anything? And if you really know what's going on, the first thing you should do is save yourself. If you're such an advanced scientist, such an advanced doctor, such an advanced whatever, your first order of business is to save yourself. When you demonstrate to us that you're living on for hundreds and thousands of years, then we'll come to you and say, oh my dear scientist, sir, please make me live also. They can. They can't save themselves. So why should we take their opinion? There's so much they cannot explain. They put on a good show of being advanced scientifically, medically, this way, that way, but they are still in the dark ages. They don't know what's going on. Because it's really, we know why. Because they're being bewildered by the super soul. They have a little bit of knowledge, and on that knowledge they go around and they hold out their hand, pay me hundreds of millions of thousands of dollars. I'm a big, big this, that. And at the end of the day, the big, big this, that can't save himself or herself from death. If you're a big, big doctor, the first person you should save from death is yourself. Why run around getting all these accolades that you saved this person and that person? Save yourself from death. Otherwise, I don't want to hear from you. When you demonstrate, when I go to Cedar Sinai, as we call it, because we know there nobody's going to live there. When we go to Cedar Sinai, we want to know, show me that doctor that's been here for the last 1,000 years. Or even the last 200 years. No, they all have a career that lasts a few decades, and they walk around puffed up, I'm a doctor, I saved so many people, and then, look, doctor is gone. Save yourself first, and then we'll be very impressed. You see? So we are not impressed by people like that who don't accept this. We are not impressed. First of all, if you're so advanced, you save yourself. We're not impressed. You see? Where we take what the Bhagavatam says, not blindly, but based on the fact of the personalities who present it. Like A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivedanta Thakur. These caliber of personalities, they accept the Bhagavatam as being truth. They don't accept the mythology that modern science is going to keep us living forever. They don't accept that. You see? So, once you make that decision, that these modern scientists are so advanced, but they can't even save themselves, therefore I'm not impressed, then you turn to the real scientists, the spiritual scientists, the A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swamis, and the Bhaktisiddhantas, and Bhaktivedanta Thakur, and then you get real knowledge. You have to take one camp or the other. You yourself cannot prove one way or the other. We don't have such advanced situation that we can prove one way or the other. We have to take shelter in one camp or the other. Either you take shelter in a materialistic camp and then you pay obeisances to Dr. such and such and hope that he can save you whenever something is wrong, or you take shelter in the spiritual camp and you pay obeisances to A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and trust that he's going to give you the path to eternal life to get out of here. One way or the other, you have to take. You may not be able to prove one or the other. You have to take shelter. But we don't take shelter blindly. Because again, we've seen that all these big scientists, big philosophers, big doctors, they've all died and gone away. They were not able to save themselves. So somebody may say, well, you guys are what's going to die also. Yes. But we are not fooled into thinking that the death of the body means the death of the person. Because all along we have experienced that we're not this body. Every single night we put the body down and again we go off and we do all kinds of stuff. And we wake up. And many times you wake up and you say to your partner, your mother, you know, last night I saw, so you just cut him off immediately. What do you mean you saw? Your eyes were closed all night. What do you mean you saw? So the fact that you wake up and you say you saw something means, proves that you and the ability to see have nothing to do with this material body. That material body was laying down all night with the eyes closed. Yet you wake up and you say, did you saw such and such? You see? So just from empiric evidence, just from our daily experience, we are experiencing every day that I'm not this body. I am an entity separate from this body. My consciousness is separate from this body. And we all experience. So we should want to explore that path, that reality. Because this day-to-day reality that we're experiencing on the bodily platform, we all know what's going to happen already. The script is already written. Anyone who's taken birth, Krishna says back in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who's taken birth, death is certain. You have a birth date, you have a death date coming up. So why just wait around for the death date, watching television and you know whatever? Do something positive, proactive. That's what this Bhagavatam is meant for. A proactive way of living so that you can get back to the platform of deathlessness. Real deathlessness, not the nectar that the demons and demigods were fighting over. That is just a temporary panacea. It's not the real deathlessness. Real deathlessness is drinking this bhagavatam, pibhata bhagavatam, rasamalayam. This is the real deathlessness. Anything else? Anybody else have one more quick question before we wrap it up? I saw another hand somewhere. Okay. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.